This is an ad by Regain Couples Therapy.
Let's be honest. Loving your partner doesn't mean you always like them, and guess what? That's normal. Regain offers couples therapy that's flexible, affordable, and 100% online.
Whether you're reconnecting or working through conflict, Regain is here to support you both.
See why people wish they'd try couples therapy sooner. Visit regain.com/couplespod to get 10% off your first month. That's regain.com/couplespod.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
I was just her stepping stone. She cheated and called me dead weight the day she graduated. 5 years. It's strange how long that can feel when every minute is spent chasing a future that was never really yours to claim. My name is Marcus Hale, and for what feels like a lifetime, my world revolved around a single mission to help my wife, Sienna, achieve her dreams. It wasn't just something I said at the altar. It was a promise that wove itself into every muscle ache, every sleepless night, every silent prayer whispered behind the wheel of that beat-up delivery van. I would start my mornings before the sun cracked the sky, stacking pallets in freezing warehouses where the forklifts beeped endlessly. Then I'd clock out just long enough to grab a stale sandwich and start my evening shift delivering packages. Amazon, groceries, pizza, you name it. I dropped it off with a tired smile that barely masked how close I was to crumbling. Every time I stumbled through the door at 3 a.m., Sienna would be there in our tiny apartment, curled up on the couch with her nursing textbooks scattered like a fan around her. She'd blink up at me, exhaustion matching mine, and whisper, "Just a little longer, baby." I lived for those words. I kissed her forehead, tucked the blanket around her, and told myself that love was measured in sacrifices, not in comfort. I watched her grind too, studying through migraines, pulling all-nighters before exams, fighting the gnawing fear that she wasn't good enough. And God help me, I admired her for it. I didn't see the warning signs, not really. I chalked up the distance between us to stress, the way her laughter no longer filled the room like it used to, the way her eyes sometimes darted away when I said, "I love you," how she stopped asking me about my day. I thought we were just tired, overworked, climbing that steep hill together. Every time she cried about failing a mock test or doubted her abilities, I held her tighter, working harder to build the foundation she could stand on. I remember one night clearer than most, the night she got her acceptance letter into the nursing program. She screamed, leaping into my arms, her joy so blinding I forgot how heavy my own chest felt. "We did it," she cried, and in that moment, I believed it was true. We, not her, us, a team. What a fool I was. Over the years, every dollar I earned funneled into her education, books that cost as much as our monthly utilities, lab coats, clinical supplies, gas money for hospital rotations. Meanwhile, I wore shoes.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Shoes with holes in the soles, and my idea of a luxury meal was adding bacon to a drive-through cheeseburger. It didn't matter. I convinced myself it would all be worth it in the end, that one day we'd look back at the struggle and laugh, wrapped up in a better life we had bled together to build. That was the dream, wasn't it? Build her up so we could rise together. What I didn't realize, what I was too stupid, too trusting, too in love to realize, was that in her mind, the finish line wasn't the beginning of our next chapter. It was the end of my usefulness. I was the training wheel she couldn't wait to kick off once she learned how to balance without me. All the whispered promises, all the midnight forehead kisses, they weren't a covenant. They were a transaction with a hidden expiration date, and when it finally came due, I wouldn't even be afforded the dignity of a warning. There's a cruelty in hope. It blinds you to the moments when the people you love most start packing up pieces of themselves without telling you. You stand there, smiling like a fool, holding out your heart like an offering, never noticing that their hands are already too full with new dreams you no longer fit inside. 5 years of believing, of breaking my back to build a dream that was only meant for one of us. 5 years of just a little longer, baby, echoing in my ears, a lullaby masking a slow goodbye. I carried that hope like a fool carries a winning lottery ticket he never bothered to check, thinking it would save me, change everything, when really it was just paper, worthless once the numbers were revealed. I wish I could say I saw it coming, that I noticed the way her hugs turned hollow, or the way she flinched when I mentioned the future. But love makes you blind in the most insidious way, not by covering your eyes, but by filling them with so much brightness you can't see the cracks forming in the foundation. I didn't see it. I didn't feel it until it hit me full force, like a sledgehammer to the chest. And by the time I realized the truth, there was no going back. Sienna Hale, the woman I built my life around, had already decided that the life we built together was a stepping stone she was ready to leave behind. And me? I was just the fool, still standing at the bottom of the staircase, arms outstretched, waiting for a hand that was never going to reach back down. I didn't know what I was walking into that day. If I had, maybe I would have braced myself harder. Maybe I would have recognized the brittle tension in the air the moment I stepped through the door. But no, after all those years, some part of me still believed in happy endings. I had stopped at the store on my way home from the night shift, the exhaustion heavy in my bones, but the excitement somehow stronger. I'd grabbed a cheap bouquet of roses and a card that said, "Proud of you" in big, stupid gold letters. I was ready to celebrate her, us, everything we had fought so hard for. But when I pushed the door open, the apartment was too still, too staged, almost like a set on a show where I was the only one who hadn't read the script. The champagne bottle caught my eye first, glinting in the sunlight like a trap. It sat in the center of the kitchen table, next to a neat stack of papers. And there she was, Sienna, radiant in her crisp white coat, the symbol of all those years of sacrifice made real. She looked like everything we had ever dreamed of. For half a second I smiled, half a second before the pit opened under my feet. She turned, her expression shining with something that wasn't joy. It was freedom, a wild, untamed relief that had nothing to do with me. "You made it," she said lightly, picking up the champagne and popping the cork with an ease that made my stomach twist. Foam spilled over the edge, and she giggled, pouring two glasses without even looking at me. I set the flowers down stupidly on the counter. They looked pathetic there, bright, desperate, and out of place in a room that no longer belonged to me. I reached for the papers, my fingers trembling slightly, my heart hammering a warning I didn't yet have the courage to heed. I didn't need to read the title. I knew instantly. Divorce agreement. Property division. No kids. No assets except the battered truck and the worn furniture we bought secondhand when we were broke and stupid and wildly in love. I lifted my gaze to hers, searching, pleading silently for some explanation, some hint of the woman I had given everything to. Instead, she smiled wider, clinking her glass against mine. "I need to grow without dead weight holding me back," she said, her tone breezy, as if discussing a new hairstyle. Dead weight. That was what I had become to her, a tether she no longer wanted dragging behind her now that she had the wings she needed. I didn't argue, not because I agreed, but because I realized, standing there like an idiot in my work boots and warehouse uniform, that anything I said would only dignify the way she had already rewritten our history. Love hadn't died here. It had been methodically buried, replaced by ambition, by resentment, by a hunger for a life that no longer included me. I sat down heavily at the table, the chair groaning under the weight of the moment, and reached for the pen she had already thoughtfully placed beside the papers. My hand hovered for a second where I thought about fighting, about begging her to remember the nights we slept on an air mattress because we couldn't afford a bed frame, about the nights I came home with frostbitten fingers just to put gas in her car so she could make it to her clinicals, about all the invisible ways I had built a world around her. But what good would it do? She had already decided I didn't belong in the life she had fought for. So I signed. No hesitation, no dramatic pause for effect, just the quick, brutal scratch of pen on paper. Behind me I heard laughter, a soft, mocking giggle that made my skin crawl. I turned slightly to see Rachel, Sienna's best friend, leaning against the kitchen doorway with a glass of champagne in hand. Her smirk was barely disguised. She didn't even try to hide her satisfaction. I realized then that this wasn't a private betrayal. It was a celebration, a liberation, the two of them, giddy with the idea of a future without me cluttering up the picture. I pushed the signed papers toward Sienna and stood up. The chair scraped loudly against the floor, a sharp, ugly sound that felt too fitting for the moment. She didn't say thank you, didn't say sorry, just picked up the papers, glanced at my signature, and nodded approvingly, as if I had just completed one final chore before being dismissed. I walked to the door on legs that felt strangely detached from my body, numb and slow. I didn't look back. I didn't give them the satisfaction of seeing whatever emotion might have leaked through the cracks. Not anger, not sadness, nothing. Let them laugh. let them toast. Outside, the world was achingly normal. Birds chirped. A neighbor washed his car. Somewhere, a lawnmower buzzed. The sun was too bright, too oblivious to the shattering that had just occurred behind that door. I climbed into my old pickup, my hands gripping the steering wheel until my knuckles turned white. For a long moment, I just sat there, staring straight ahead, trying to remember how to breathe without her. 5 years ago, I had vowed to build a life around her. I had spent every waking moment stacking stone after stone, brick after brick, constructing a dream that she could stand tall within. And today, with a few strokes of a pen and a bottle of champagne, she had bulldozed it all to the ground, not with rage or cruelty, but with something colder, indifference. I shifted the truck into gear and pulled away from the curb, the tires crunching over loose gravel. I didn't cry, I didn't rage. I just drove, 1 mile at a time, away from the life I had built, away from the woman who no longer needed me. Somewhere deep down, a tiny broken voice whispered that maybe this wasn't the end, maybe it was the beginning. But in that moment, it didn't feel like it. In that moment, it felt like all I had left were ashes. The night air clung to my skin like a second, colder layer as I packed my life into the back of my battered blue pickup. There wasn't much to load, some clothes, a few tools, an old coffee maker with a cracked handle, and a box of memories I couldn't yet bring myself to throw away. The same memories that felt like a weight chained to my chest. I moved quietly, methodically, as if making too much noise might give someone the chance to talk me out of leaving. But no one came out, no one stopped me. The apartment that had once been our sanctuary now loomed behind me, windows glowing warmly like a cruel joke. I didn't expect Sienna to come outside. I guess some stubborn, wounded part of me hoped she might. That maybe she'd stand on the porch, arms crossed in that way she used to when we fought, daring me to stay, daring me to care enough to fight back. But the doorway stayed empty. The only figure that appeared was her mother, Carla. She leaned against the porch post, a full glass of wine swirling lazily in her hand. She wore a smirk like armor, watching me like a cat watches a trapped mouse. I didn't give her the satisfaction of meeting her gaze, didn't flinch when she raised the glass in a mocking toast as I loaded the last of my things. Her contempt didn't hurt nearly as much as Sienna's indifference. The engine of my truck coughed to life, a rough, defiant sound in the stillness of the night. I slammed the door shut, the echo bouncing off the nearby houses, and for the first time in years there was no one waiting behind a window to see if I made it home safe. I was alone, completely, undeniably alone. I gripped the steering wheel until my knuckles ached and dared one last glance into the rearview mirror. That's when I saw her, Sienna, standing inside the living room, visible through the thin curtain. She wasn't crying. She wasn't even looking in my direction. She was laughing, tossing her graduation cap in the air like she had just won a game I never realized we were playing. The sight punched the air out of my lungs harder than any physical blow ever could. I swallowed the sharp ache in my throat, shifted the truck into reverse, and backed out of the driveway without looking back again. I didn't peel out. I didn't slam the brakes for dramatic effect. I simply left. I drove slow, deliberate, every mile putting more distance between the man who had begged for scraps of love and the man I was about to become. My phone buzzed on the passenger seat, lighting up with Jasper's name. My brother, always loyal, always ready to charge into battle for me, even when I didn't ask. I let it ring, let it go to voicemail. He had called 3 times already today, his voice getting more desperate each time. "Marcus, don't do this, man. She's just scared. She doesn't mean it. You guys can fix this." But there was no fixing something that had been broken quietly over years, with every dismissive glance, every forgotten promise, every whisper just a little longer that had slowly rotted away what we once were. No, I was done fighting for someone who had so clearly stopped fighting for me. Done bleeding for a love that had turned into a transaction she could terminate when it no longer served her. I silenced the phone, shoving it deep into the glove compartment where its pleading buzz would be nothing more than a faint, distant memory. The farther I drove, the lighter I felt, an unfamiliar, almost terrifying sensation, like I had been carrying a boulder on my back for so long that standing upright again felt wrong, unnatural. I didn't have a plan, no job lined up, no new place to stay. I had a few thousand in the bank, a battered pickup, and the clothes on my back. That's it. But for the first time in a long time, I also had something Sienna could never again take from me, my freedom. Somewhere beyond the horizon, there had to be a life not built on sacrifice alone, a life that didn't require me to shrink smaller and smaller just to fit into someone else's dream. I drove until the familiar landmarks disappeared, until the city lights faded into a blanket of stars I hadn't seen in years, until the ache in my chest dulled into something manageable. I didn't know exactly where I was heading, I just knew it had to be somewhere Sienna's memory couldn't reach. Somewhere I could be just Marcus. Not Marcus the delivery guy, Marcus the night manager. Marcus the husband who wasn't enough. Just Marcus. Around dawn, I pulled over on the side of a quiet country road. The field stretched out endlessly on either side, the mist curling around the low hills like lazy ghosts. I killed the engine and sat there for a moment, breathing in the silence, letting it settle into the empty spaces Sienna had left behind. I opened the glove compartment and pulled out my phone again. One last check. No new messages, no frantic apology, no sudden realization of regret. And somehow, that made it easier. I deleted her number, the final cut of a thread I had clung to long after it had frayed beyond repair. Then I dropped the phone back in the glove box, closed it with a soft click, and leaned back against the worn seat. I didn't cry. The tears had dried up somewhere between the sound of Rachel's laughter and the sight of Sienna's cap flying through the air. What was left wasn't sadness. It wasn't even anger. It was something colder, something sharper, resolve. I was done being the man who stayed, done being the man who waited. From this moment forward, every mile, every hour, every breath would be mine. And as the sun rose slowly over the empty fields, painting the sky with the soft golds and pinks of a new day, I realized something else. I wasn't lost. I was finally free. Ashwood Creek wasn't on any of the maps that mattered. If you blinked driving through it, you'd miss the cracked welcome sign and the two narrow streets that made up its town center. And that was exactly why I chose it. I needed a place forgotten by ambition, a place that didn't demand explanations or apologies. The day I rolled into Ashwood, my pickup sputtering like it shared my exhaustion, I knew I'd found what I was looking for. It wasn't much to look at. Rows of aging brick buildings, a gas station with one working pump, and a diner with a peeling sign that simply said, Gus's. I parked in front of the diner, mostly because I didn't know where else to go. My stomach gnawed at me, empty after a long, restless night of driving. When I stepped inside, the place smelled like strong coffee, bacon grease, and something sweeter underneath it all. Maybe hope. A few old-timers hunched over their breakfasts, boots tapping rhythmically against the scuffed linoleum floor. The woman behind the counter gave me a once-over and a small nod, like she'd seen my kind before, the kind running from something they didn't want to talk about. I slid into a booth near the window, the vinyl seat sticking to my jeans, the early morning sun slicing across the table. Before I could pick up a menu, a gruff voice interrupted.
Coffee?
I looked up to find Gus himself, a thick-set man with a shock of gray hair, arms like tree trunks, and a no-nonsense stare that pinned me to the spot. I nodded mutely. He poured without waiting for a response, the dark liquid steaming between us. You new around here? He asked, setting the pot down with a thunk. Passing through, I lied, even though some part of me knew I had no intention of moving on. Gus grunted, unimpressed. He slid a plate of bacon and eggs in front of me without asking what I wanted, then walked away. I stared at the food, my throat tightening unexpectedly. It had been a long time since someone gave me something without asking for anything in return. Days blurred into weeks after that first meal. I found work almost immediately. A guy named Vernon ran a construction crew that always needed strong backs willing to sweat under the sun. It was hard, brutal work, hauling cinder blocks, mixing concrete by hand, hammering nails until my arms felt like jelly. But it was honest. I didn't mind the blisters or the way my muscles screamed at night. Pain felt good, tangible, unlike the ache Sienna left behind, which was all sharp edges and no place to touch. At night, when the work boots came off and the ache set in, I found myself drifting back to Gus's diner. It wasn't fancy, just a few chipped mugs, a jukebox that only played half the songs right, and a counter that leaned slightly to one side. But it became a kind of refuge. Gus wasn't the talkative type, but he had a way of saying exactly what needed to be said in as few words as possible. Like the night he tossed me a set of keys without warning. Studio apartment upstairs, he said, jerking his thumb toward a narrow staircase by the kitchen. It's empty, cheap rent if you don't mind fixing a few things yourself. I didn't even hesitate. I needed a place. I needed a beginning. The studio was barely bigger than a storage closet. One room with a mattress on the floor, a battered dresser, and a tiny bathroom with a leaking faucet. But it was mine. No ghosts in the walls, no memories bleeding from the floorboards, just four blank walls and the raw material of a new life waiting to be shaped. Gus and I struck an unspoken agreement. I helped out around the diner when I wasn't on a construction site, fixing leaky pipes, repairing broken stools, cleaning out the grease traps nobody else wanted to touch. In return, Gus paid me under the table and kept the coffee flowing. More than once, he caught me working late into the night, grease smeared across my arms, the soft sounds of country music humming from the jukebox. You ain't broken, son, he said one evening, handing me a beer and leaning against the counter. You're just unappreciated. There's a difference. I stared at him, not sure if I should laugh or cry. I settled for nodding. Maybe he was right. Maybe being left behind wasn't the same as being worthless. Maybe it was just the wrong people who didn't know how to value what they had. Slowly, painfully, I started stitching myself back together. Not with grand declarations or flashy new beginnings, but with small, steady steps, fixing the squeaky diner door, rebuilding an old motorcycle I bought off a guy for $200, watching the sun rise over Ashwood Creek's endless fields, breathing air that didn't feel heavy with failure. I didn't tell anyone from my old life where I was, not Jasper, not my parents, definitely not Sienna. It wasn't about punishing them or proving a point. It was about preserving the fragile, growing thing inside me. The part that believed I could be more than the man left holding the empty promises of a life that was never meant to last. One night, after the diner had closed and the stars had spilled across the sky in a thick blanket, I sat on the roof above my studio, legs dangling over the edge. The cool breeze kissed my skin, and for the first time in what felt like forever, I didn't feel like I was running. I felt like I was standing still, whole, healing. Ashwood Creek didn't care who I used to be. It didn't demand explanations or penance. It just existed. Quiet. Steady, real, and maybe that was all I needed right now, a place to exist without pretending, a place where I could finally remember who Marcus Hale was before love and loss twisted him into something he barely recognized. The road behind me was closed, the road ahead was uncertain, but for the first time in a long time, the road was mine. It didn't happen overnight, the feeling of belonging. It was like watching a sunrise creep across the horizon, slow, almost invisible at first, but undeniable once it warmed your skin. Ashwood Creek, with its peeling paint and weathered storefronts, became the background of a life I was quietly, stubbornly building. I wasn't Marcus Hale, the man who got left behind anymore. I wasn't anybody, really, and for the first time, that felt like freedom. I bought a house just outside town, a sagging old place with a crumbling porch, vines crawling up the sides like it was being slowly swallowed by nature. The roof leaked when it rained, the front steps were rotted through. Most people would have laughed and driven by. But when I stood there with the keys in my hand, I saw potential. It was mine. It didn't have to be perfect. It just had to be mine. I spent every spare hour fixing it, replacing floorboards, sealing leaks, hauling scrap wood from job sites. Every nail I hammered into place felt like reclaiming a piece of myself. The locals started to notice me, not in the intrusive city kind of way, but in the way of small towns, where a nod at the grocery store meant acceptance. Gus introduced me to a few guys at the VFW hall, and before long, I was helping out with their weekend projects, repairing fences, building wheelchair ramps, hauling firewood before the first snows hit. It wasn't glamorous. It wasn't the life I had once dreamed about when Sienna and I plotted our future over late-night takeout, but it was real, solid under my boots, honest in a way that left no room for the kind of betrayal I'd left behind. And then there was Delilah. I met her on a Tuesday afternoon, the kind of humid day where the air sticks to your skin and the clouds hang low like they're too tired to rain. I was fixing the porch rail at the diner when a silver SUV pulled into the gravel lot, dust kicking up behind it. She stepped out with a camera slung around her neck, her hair pulled back in a messy knot, wearing scuffed boots and a denim jacket that looked like it had seen 100 road trips. She glanced around with a kind of wide-eyed curiosity, like she was cataloging the details of the world around her. Our eyes met and she smiled, a simple open thing that hit me harder than I expected. I nodded, wiping the sweat from my forehead with the back of my hand. She walked over without hesitation. You're not from around here, she said, her voice light, teasing, not accusing, just an observation. I shrugged. Guess that makes two of us. She laughed, the sound low and genuine. It wasn't a flirtatious laugh, not the polished kind Sienna used to deploy like a weapon. It was easy, honest. She introduced herself, Delilah Moore, a traveling photographer documenting small towns across America. I didn't have much to say about myself, and she didn't pry. She just sat on the porch steps while I worked, snapping photos of the diner sign, the chipped coffee mug through the window, the way the afternoon sun turned the dust into gold. Over the next few weeks, she kept showing up. Sometimes she ordered a slice of pie and nursed a cup of coffee for hours, flipping through her photos. Sometimes she sat at the counter and swapped stories with Gus, making the old man laugh in a way I hadn't seen before. And sometimes she found me wherever I was, patching a fence or tuning an engine, and asked if she could take my picture. At first, I said no. I didn't want to be captured, frozen in time as the broken man who ran away. But Delilah had a way of looking at you that made you feel seen, not judged, not pitied, just seen. One day, I relented. She snapped a few shots of me sanding down a motorcycle frame behind the diner. I expected to hate them, expected to see the ghost of who I used to be. But when she showed them to me, I didn't see a broken man. I saw someone still standing, still fighting. Delilah didn't ask about my past. She didn't push. She just let me exist beside her, quietly, steadily, until it felt natural to open up. Sitting on the tailgate of my truck one night, under a sky so full of stars it looked like it could swallow us whole, I found myself telling her things I hadn't said out loud in years, about the 5 years of tomorrows I gave to someone who never planned to stay, about the night spent wondering what I could have done differently, about the quiet rage that sometimes still curled in my gut when I thought about Sienna's laughter as I drove away. Delilah listened. She didn't interrupt, didn't offer easy platitudes. When I finally ran out of words, she reached over and took my hand in hers, simple, certain, grounding. You deserve to be loved where you're celebrated, she said softly, not tolerated. The words hit something raw and aching deep inside me. I didn't realize how badly I needed to hear them until that moment, how much I had twisted myself over the years, trying to be small enough, patient enough, good enough for someone who had already decided I wasn't what she wanted. With Delilah, there was no tightrope to walk, no invisible test to pass. I could just be. For the first time in a decade, I believed it might be possible, that maybe I wasn't too broken, that maybe being left behind wasn't the end of the story. It was just the beginning of a new chapter, one I would write on my own terms, with my own hands, on the porch of a crumbling house, that I would make strong again. And this time, I wouldn't be chasing someone else's dreams. This time, I would be living mine. Back in the city, the life Sienna had fought so hard to build was beginning to unravel, thread by thread, while I was learning how to breathe again. Of course, I didn't know it then. I had stopped checking, stopped wondering. In my mind, she had gotten everything she ever wanted, the degree, the freedom, the fresh start without me weighing her down. I imagined her thriving, smiling that dazzling smile she used to flash when she talked about her future. I figured she had erased me the way a teacher wipes a chalkboard clean, quick and efficient, no trace of what had been written before. I was wrong. Sienna's world wasn't the glossy fairy tale she had envisioned. The new life she crafted with such precision quickly started to show its cracks. Rachel, her so-called best friend, the one who toasted my exit with a glass of champagne, turned out to be less of a support system and more of a wrecking ball, partying every night, dragging Sienna into scene after scene she had no real stomach for. Nights that started with laughter ended with shame, mornings spent scrubbing at regret with coffee and sunglasses, and a thousand whispered lies about how this was all just a phase, just a little fun before real life began. Then there was Carla, her mother, whose constant hovering and judging only amplified every little failure Sienna tried to hide. Carla didn't see a daughter carving out her independence. She saw an extension of herself, a trophy she could parade at brunches and charity events. Every mistake Sienna made, every job application that was ignored, every relationship that fizzled, became another lecture, another reminder that she wasn't living up to the image her mother had painted for her. The applause Sienna had craved so desperately started sounding hollow when it came with conditions and criticism buried underneath the praise. Even the job she finally landed wasn't what she imagined. Nursing, once her dream, turned into 12-hour shifts of thankless patients, arrogant doctors, and endless paperwork. The scrubs weren't glamorous. The pay wasn't life-changing. The reality didn't match the fantasy she'd sacrificed so much for. She watched other nurses smile when they clocked out and realized she couldn't remember the last time she felt joy, not real joy, the kind that bubbles up from somewhere deep and pure. Her days blurred into a cycle of exhaustion and resentment, and the pride she had worn on graduation day dulled under the weight of repetition and loneliness. Loneliness. That was the worst part. The men she dated were a carousel of the same smiling faces, the same empty promises. None of them stayed long. None of them really knew her. Not the way I had known her, back when she was still the girl who cried over bad grades and dreamed of saving lives. She traded gold for glitter. And when the glitter blew away in the wind, she was left standing in the ashes, wondering when everything had gone so wrong. One night, rummaging through a drawer she hadn't touched in years, she found an old photo. It was us, standing in front of the apartment on the day we signed the lease, beaming like idiots, holding a set of keys between us like it was Excalibur. I had one arm slung around her shoulders and she was laughing, a real, unguarded laugh that crinkled her nose and made her eyes shine. The sight of it hit her like a freight train. For the first time in a long time, she sat down and really looked at it. Not the surface, but the layers underneath. She remembered the man who worked three jobs so she could study. The man who kissed her knuckles before every exam and waited outside the hospital after clinical rotations with a thermos of hot chocolate. The man who believed in her when she didn't believe in herself. And slowly, horrifyingly, she realized she had thrown it away, not for a better life, not for happiness, but for an illusion. She had mistaken ambition for fulfillment, freedom for happiness, and in the process, she had betrayed the only person who had ever truly stood beside her without asking for anything in return. That night, surrounded by empty wine glasses and unopened mail, she cried harder than she ever had before. She wasn't crying for the life she thought she lost. She was crying for the man she had left standing at the door with a heart full of loyalty and a bouquet of crushed roses. For the first time, she wasn't angry at me. She wasn't resentful. She was ashamed. But shame is a funny thing. It doesn't come with a clear path to redemption. It festers. It eats away at your sleep, your smile, your reflection in the mirror. It makes you do desperate things like pick up your phone and scroll through old numbers, praying you hadn't deleted the one person you swore you'd never need again. Sienna realized too late that love like mine didn't come around twice, that sometimes when you burn a bridge, you don't just lose the path back, you lose the right to even look across the river. Meanwhile, back in Ashwood Creek, I was living my quiet life, unaware of the storm gathering on the horizon. I wasn't spending my nights mourning what I lost anymore. I wasn't chasing ghosts. I was building something real, with my hands, with my heart. I was learning that sometimes survival isn't about holding on, it's about letting go. And in letting go, I was finding pieces of myself I thought had been buried forever. I wasn't the man who staggered out of that apartment with his world in boxes. I was someone new, someone stronger, someone Sienna wouldn't recognize even if she tried. And soon enough, she would try. It started with a ripple, not a wave. A few missed calls, a handful of emails I didn't recognize. At first, I thought little of it. Ashwood Creek wasn't the kind of place that attracted strangers, and I was careful about who I gave my number to. The messages weren't direct. No names, no explanations, just a series of vague attempts to reach me. I ignored them all. I had learned the hard way that sometimes silence was the only defense you needed. What I didn't know, what I couldn't have known then, was that a search had begun. Somewhere in that polished apartment back in the city, Sienna had realized I wasn't just waiting around for her to come back. I wasn't sitting by the window pining for the woman who had used me as a stepping stone. I was gone, really gone, and it rattled her more than she expected. The first person she tried to reach was Jasper. My brother had always been easier to find than I was, and if anyone knew where I had disappeared to, it would have been him. But Sienna was a few years too late. Jasper had moved to California, chasing his own dreams, far from the wreckage I left behind. When she called, he didn't answer. When she texted, he replied with two words, "Not my problem." It didn't take her long to figure out that the usual ways of finding people, mutual friends, old neighbors, were dead ends. Most of the people who once knew me had either moved on or hadn't heard from me in years. I had made sure of that. When I left, I didn't just pack up my things. I packed up my entire existence. No breadcrumbs, no forwarding address. I didn't want to be found, not by her, not by anyone. Desperation must have crept in then, turning into a frantic, blind scramble. She turned to social media, trolling through Facebook groups, LinkedIn profiles, any digital footprint she could find. It didn't take her long to stumble across the diner's page, Gus's Diner, the old name still lingering in the metadata. Except now it wasn't Gus's anymore. It was the Second Chance Cafe. New name, new owners, new life. She messaged the page, hoping whoever ran it could lead her to me. She probably imagined me still washing dishes in the back, still stuck in the same small loop of existence she had discarded. But the page was managed by Gus's niece now, and she didn't recognize Sienna's name, didn't know my story. She ignored the message, another dead end. Frustrated, Sienna got in her car and drove to my parents' old neighborhood. The house she had once visited for Sunday dinners was gone, sold to a family with three kids and a dog that barked at her when she knocked. Strangers answered the door, giving her polite but weary smiles before shaking their heads. No Marcus Hale here, no one by that name, no one who cared. The panic bloomed full force then, wrapping around her throat like a vice. It's funny how you can walk away from someone, thinking you've won, only to realize later that you were the one who lost everything that mattered. She thought she had all the time in the world, that if she ever wanted, she could just turn around and I'd be there, waiting, like some loyal, broken thing too stupid to realize he deserved better. But the man she left behind wasn't waiting anymore. He was living. Back in Ashwood Creek, I had no idea of the chaos unraveling miles away. I was too busy sanding down the frame of an old Harley, grease staining my hands, the smell of oil and sun-warmed metal filling the air. Life was simple here, honest. If I wasn't working at the bike shop, I was at the diner or tinkering with the house, slowly turning it from a sagging wreck into a place that felt like a home. Delilah's laughter often drifted through my days now, a low, easy sound that warmed places inside me I thought had permanently gone cold. She never pressed when I seemed lost in thought, never tried to fix what wasn't broken. She just stood beside me, silent and steady, while I learned how to be a man who didn't define himself by the love he lost. If Sienna's search had a soundtrack, it would have been the frantic pounding of keys against a laptop, the shrill, unanswered ringing of phones, the hollow click of messages sent and ignored. The harder she searched, the more she realized how completely I had slipped through her fingers. And with every dead end, the truth grew harder to ignore. She hadn't just lost me, she had lost the version of herself that mattered. The man she discarded wasn't broken anymore. He wasn't limping after her shadow. He wasn't begging to be seen. He had disappeared into a life better, quieter, stronger than the one she traded him for. When her desperation finally curdled into panic, she did what all desperate people do. She tried harder, grasping at anything that might lead her back to what she didn't appreciate until it was too late. Old acquaintances, old numbers, even random chance meetings in the city. She cast her net wide, hoping for a miracle. But miracles are for the faithful. And Sienna had abandoned faith the minute she signed those papers with a champagne toast. And somewhere deep inside, she must have started to understand the most terrifying truth of all. Sometimes, when you burn a bridge, it doesn't just collapse behind you. Sometimes it collapses beneath your own feet, too. Meanwhile, I lived each day without her ghost shadowing my steps, without her laughter haunting my dreams, without the weight of wondering when she would realize what she lost. I didn't know the storm was coming. I didn't know how close it already was. But even if I had, I wouldn't have flinched, because when you build a life from ashes, you stop fearing the fire. The first thing I noticed that Thursday afternoon was the rain. It came down hard and fast, drumming against the roof of the Second Chance Cafe with a steady, relentless rhythm. I had just finished a long shift at the bike shop, my hands still stained with oil, the ache of honest work settled deep in my bones. I didn't check my phone right away. I peeled off my damp jacket, shook the rain from my hair, and ordered a coffee at the counter from Marlene, Gus's niece, who gave me the same easy smile she always did. It wasn't until I sat down at my usual corner table, the one near the window that overlooked Main Street, that I dug into my pocket and fished out my phone. The screen lit up like a flashing red alarm, 169 missed calls. I stared at it, the number not making any sense at first. I scrolled through the call log. Every single one came from the same unknown number, rapid fire, sometimes minutes apart. Whoever it was, they hadn't given up easily. Curiosity won out over instinct. I thumbed the screen and called the number back. It barely rang once before it connected. Marcus? The voice on the other end was raw, shaking, almost unrecognizable, but I knew it. Some things, no matter how much you want to forget them, etch themselves into your bones. It was Sienna. For a second, I said nothing, just sat there, the rain beating against the window, the hum of the diner around me fading into a low, distant murmur. She was sobbing, messy and loud, like the kind of crying that doesn't care who hears. I made a mistake, Marcus, she choked out, the words tumbling over each other. God, I made the biggest mistake of my life. I was stupid. I thought I knew what I wanted. I thought... Her voice cracked so hard I thought she might break in half through the phone. I need you. Please. I'll do whatever it takes. I can fix this. I can fix us. I leaned back in my chair, feeling strangely detached, like I was listening to a story about someone else's life. The desperation in her voice might have gutted me once. Months ago, maybe even weeks ago, I would have hung on every word, foolishly clinging to the hope that love could erase betrayal. But not now. Now I heard the truth buried beneath the begging, the panic of someone who realized too late that not all doors stay open forever. I didn't rush to answer. I let her fill the silence with more frantic words, apologies, promises, memories she tried to string together into something that sounded like redemption. I listened. I owed her that much. Maybe. Or maybe I didn't owe her a damn thing. When I finally spoke, my voice was calm, steady, no anger, no hatred, just the kind of quiet certainty that comes when you finally understand your own worth. I'm not the man you left behind anymore. The words hung there, suspended between us like a blade. I didn't elaborate. I didn't try to soften the blow. I didn't give her a roadmap back to me. Some journeys aren't meant to be retraced. There was a long, hollow pause on the other end of the line. I imagined her sitting in whatever apartment or car she was hiding in, the walls closing in around her, the realization sinking in that she couldn't just rewind the clock and erase the damage she had done. And then, before she could gather herself enough to say whatever she was about to say next, I hung up. It wasn't anger that made me do it. It was mercy. For her, for me, for the boy I'd been who would have clung to the fantasy that love could heal everything if you just wanted it badly enough. That boy deserved peace, and the man I was now was finally strong enough to give it to him. I set the phone down on the table, face down, and wrapped my hands around the warm mug of coffee Marlene had set in front of me. The heat seeped into my palms, grounding me. Around me, life went on. Gus argued good-naturedly with a customer about the weather. Someone dropped a spoon and cursed under their breath. The jukebox in the corner crackled to life with an old country song about losing and finding yourself again. The rain blurred the world outside into a smear of gray and silver. But inside, I felt clear for the first time in years. Delilah slid into the seat across from me without a word, her damp hair curling around her face, and knowing look in her eyes. She must have seen something in my expression because she didn't ask what happened. Didn't need to. She just reached across the table and squeezed my hand, her touch firm and steady. I squeezed back, a small, silent thank you for her understanding. Sienna's voice echoed faintly in my memory, but it didn't hurt the way it used to. It didn't crack me open or drag me under. It was just another sound, another closed door behind me. She had made her choice, and finally, finally, so had I. Outside the window, the rain began to slow, the heavy drops tapering off into a soft mist. The world beyond Ashwood Creek would keep spinning, full of regrets and what-ifs and people chasing the past like ghosts they could never quite catch. But me? I wasn't chasing anything anymore. I was already home. 2 days later, the storm didn't come from the sky. It walked straight through the door of the Second Chance Cafe. It was a Saturday morning, the kind that usually hummed with slow conversation and the smell of fresh biscuits drifting through the air. I was behind the counter with Gus, wiping down mugs and chatting about the upcoming county fair, when the bell above the door jingled violently, announcing something more than just a customer. I didn't have to turn around to feel the shift in the room. Conversation stalled. Forks froze halfway to mouths. Even the jukebox seemed to stutter and fall silent. I knew before I even looked who it was. Sienna stood in the doorway, drenched from head to toe, her mascara smeared in dark tracks down her cheeks, her hair clinging wetly to her face. She wore a jacket that was far too thin for the weather, her hands trembling as she clutched a soggy purse to her chest like it might anchor her. She looked nothing like the woman who had stood in our kitchen 5 years ago, radiant and triumphant, popping a champagne cork over my broken heart. Delilah sat at the counter a few stools down, cradling a cup of tea in her hands. She turned her head slightly, registering the scene without panic, her expression calm but alert. She didn't speak, she didn't move, she just watched, her presence a silent wall of strength beside me. Sienna's eyes locked onto mine, and for a moment, the whole world narrowed down to just the space between us. She stumbled forward a step, her voice breaking the thick, stunned silence of the diner. "Marcus, please." She dropped to her knees on the checkered floor with a soft thud that echoed far louder than it should have. Gasps rippled through the cafe. Forks clattered onto plates. Someone whispered a sharp curse under their breath. She crawled toward me, clutching at my hand where it rested on the counter, her fingers cold and trembling. Tears mixed with the rain on her face, making her look almost childlike in her desperation. "I'm sorry," she sobbed, her voice ragged. "I'm so sorry. I didn't know what I was doing. I was stupid. I was selfish." She hiccuped, gasping for air. I thought I needed to find myself, but I only lost everything that mattered. The diner was deathly still, everyone holding their breath, waiting to see what I would do. Gus leaned against the doorway to the kitchen, arms crossed, his mouth tugged up in a wry smile that said he had seen 100 tragedies play out before, and this one wouldn't break the world. I knelt down beside her, not because I wanted to soothe her, but because I needed her to hear me, to see me, without the barrier of height or distance. I looked into her eyes, the same eyes I had once memorized, the same ones I had once sworn to protect. And I saw nothing but the wreckage of choices she couldn't undo. I spoke softly, so only she could hear over the quiet murmur of stunned diners. "You taught me how to be invisible," I said, my voice low and steady. "You taught me that loyalty, sacrifice, love, they didn't matter if they weren't convenient for you." She shook her head fiercely, mouthing no over and over again, but I kept going. I needed her to understand this wasn't anger talking. It was clarity. "You made me a ghost," I said. "Now you'll learn how it feels." I stood up slowly, feeling the weight of every eye in the room. I could feel Delilah's steady gaze like a tether, keeping me grounded. Sienna stayed on her knees, looking up at me with a shattered expression, reaching out one last time like a drowning woman grasping for a lifeline. But I had no lifelines left to give her. Without breaking eye contact, I walked over to Delilah. She set her tea down and rose to meet me without hesitation. I reached for her hand, the same hand that had held mine through rebuilding days and long, silent nights, the hand that never demanded anything but gave everything freely. I lifted her hand to my lips and kissed it gently, reverently, in front of everyone, in front of Sienna. The meaning was clear. This was my life now. This was where my loyalty, my love belonged. Delilah smiled softly, squeezing my hand in return, not to mark territory or claim a victory, but simply to remind me that I wasn't alone anymore, that I didn't have to carry old wounds like battle medals. Sienna let out a low, broken sob that seemed to shatter against the walls of the diner. I didn't look back. I didn't need to. As I led Delilah toward the door, the rest of the diner began to buzz with movement again. Forks scraping plates, conversations picking up awkwardly, life refusing to pause for one woman's regret. Gus tipped his imaginary hat to me as I passed, a silent salute I understood without needing to hear the words. Outside, the rain had eased into a fine mist, soft and almost forgiving. I helped Delilah into my truck, climbing in beside her. For a moment, we sat there in the quiet, the windows fogging slightly from the heat of our breathing. Delilah rested her head against my shoulder. "You okay?" she murmured. I thought about it. Really thought about it, about the years I spent loving someone who couldn't love me back, about the nights I wondered if I would ever feel whole again, about the long, brutal climb out of the pit Sienna had left me in. I turned my head, pressing a kiss to Delilah's temple. "I'm better than okay," I said. "I'm free." As I started the engine and pulled away from the diner, from the wreckage of a life that wasn't mine anymore, I realized something that made me smile. Some ghosts aren't meant to haunt you forever. Some ghosts are meant to teach you how to live again. Life didn't snap back into place like a rubber band after that day. It didn't miraculously erase the years I spent trying to make myself small enough for someone else's dreams. Healing wasn't a straight road in Ashwood Creek. It was winding, full of little detours and unexpected stops. But it was mine. Every scar, every crack in my heart, every rough edge I'd once tried to sand down for the sake of someone else's comfort, none of it needed to be hidden anymore. Delilah and I built a life together the way a craftsman builds a house. Not in a rush, not with cheap shortcuts, but with careful hands and a steady patience that neither of us had ever truly been given before. She didn't complete me. She didn't fill some missing piece. She walked beside me, and that was enough. We were two whole people who chose each other, day after day, without needing to be anyone but ourselves. The day we got married, we didn't rent a fancy venue or plan some extravagant ceremony. We stood beneath the sprawling oak tree behind the cafe, the one that had shaded so many quiet conversations and tired mornings. Gus officiated, with a battered Bible in one hand and a mischievous twinkle in his eye, half reading, half making it up as he went along. The whole town showed up. Marlene from the diner, Vernon and his construction crew, even the mayor, who gave us a confused but heartfelt blessing between bites of barbecue. Delilah wore a simple dress, white cotton that fluttered around her legs in the breeze. I wore the only suit I owned, one Gus had insisted on pressing himself the night before. There were no bridesmaids, no groomsmen, no fancy flower arrangements, just us, standing under that tree, promising each other not perfection, not fantasy, but the kind of love that grows in real soil, with roots strong enough to weather any storm. When she said, "I do," it wasn't a performance. It wasn't a script rehearsed 100 times. It was a promise spoken with a quiet certainty that made my chest ache in the best way possible. When I slid the ring onto her finger, my hands didn't shake. They were steady, sure. I knew what I was giving, and I knew what I was receiving. Not a dream, not a lie, a life. Afterward, we danced barefoot on the grass, an old record player crackling with songs that skipped every third note. Children ran between tables piled high with fried chicken, pies, and jugs of sweet tea. It wasn't the wedding I once imagined as a younger man. Grand and polished and perfect. It was better. It was ours. I opened a motorcycle repair shop that summer, in a little brick building a few blocks from the cafe. It smelled like oil, metal, and hope. I spent my days rebuilding engines and mentoring young men from town who needed someone to believe in them the way Gus once believed in me. Kids with too much anger in their fists and too little guidance in their lives. I taught them how to use a wrench, how to respect a machine, how to take pride in something they built with their own hands. In the quiet hours between jobs, I sat on the front steps of the shop sipping coffee, listening to the sound of the town breathing around me. I didn't need noise anymore. I didn't need constant motion. I had learned the beauty of a still life, of a simple life, of a life lived fully in the moments most people rush through. Every so often, I would catch a glimpse of Sienna's number flashing across my phone screen. No name, just the digits burned into my memory like a brand. I never answered, never blocked it either. I didn't need to. Her calls weren't a threat. They were echoes, fading reminders of a life I had already buried with my own two hands. Sometimes when the sun dipped low and painted the sky in bruised golds and deep blues, I thought about her, about the boy I used to be, about the man I had become. I didn't hate her anymore. I didn't pity her either. I simply understood something she never could. Some goodbyes are meant to last forever, not because of anger, not because of vengeance, but because letting go is an act of love too. Love for yourself. Love for the life that still waits beyond the ashes. Delilah would come sit beside me on the steps, her camera slung over her shoulder, the scent of wildflowers clinging to her skin. She'd lean her head against my shoulder and ask, without asking, if I was okay. And I always was, more than okay. I was free. I was home. I was finally, the man I was always meant to become. Under the open sky of Ashwood Creek, with calloused hands and a heart stitched back together one day at a time, I built something no one could take from me again, a life, a love, a forever that belonged to me.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.